Hey, buddy, it's election time.
Oh, yes. How fun this whole process has been. I've been having such a delight watching everyone him and ha over certain doom, and everything's going to be mediocre.
It's fascinating.
For all of those of you out there in swing states, the deadline for voter registration is October 7th in Georgia and Arizona. And in Nevada, it's on October 8th if you're mailing in your registration. In North Carolina, it is October 11th. So if you are not registered to vote and you want to participate in this election and, you know, make the choice that Ed was just talking about, make sure that you're registered to vote now. And especially if you're in Georgia and you think you're registered to vote, I know they just did a big voter purge, so double check and make goddamn sure that you can vote when the election comes up in November.
Yeah, and also just think about the one candidate said you may never have to vote again. So maybe this could be your last chance.
So
get
please.
Out there and fucking vote. If one side wants you to vote and the other side doesn't want you to vote, it's very important to vote.
To check your registration status, you can go to usa.gov/confirm-voter-registration or nass.org/can-i-vote. Follow prompts to check out your status. And now also, Florida's October 7th and New Mexico's October 8th. And even if you're not a swing state, go out and fucking vote anyway. We're all fucking going out and voting this time.
Pile on this fuck!
Goddamn right. All right. Hit it!
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Oh, wow. It's good to ease back in.
Yeah.
You know, I just spent the last 2 days reading the thoughts of Josef Fritzl.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta say, I feel confident.
Right.
I feel changed.
Do you feel honest?
I feel upfront with me. And I really think that everybody should go in there. If you want to learn, no, we have a lot of new dads in our life.
Yeah.
And I feel like if they really want to learn how to keep a tight-knit family, you really should read the words of Josef Fritzl and talk about the joys that he experienced watching his children open presents on Christmas. And they would all rejoice with the first snowfall of the season. He writes this long, flowing thing about his favorite thing, the nutmeg. Smell of nutmeg. And it's
nutmeg was one of his daughters.
Welcome to the last podcast on the left, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Marcus Parks. I'm here with Henry Zebrowski.
I hate my daughter. Red hot Italian pepper burns my nose.
You gotta run out of names at some point.
Yes, I am very into spices.
And the eternally spicy Ed Larson.
Yes, to prepare for this episode, I've been sleeping under my bed.
Just get the vibe.
So when we last left the Fritzl family, Elizabeth had given birth to the first of her 7 inbred children while still imprisoned in the underground bunker that her father, Josef, had built.
No chaser, no beginning, no palate cleanser.
I am fucking first sentence.
Yeah, man, I'm fucking diving right into this shit.
Good.
Yeah.
She'd been locked in Fritzl's dungeon alone for 4 years and still had almost 20 to go.
Damn.
And by the way, there's no way to like slow roll into a Josef Fritzl episode once you're already in it.
Well, you could say stuff like, you know, you think you're sick of your mattress. You know, like stuff like that. You can go be like, oh, you know me, when bed rotting is taken to a new extreme in the Josef Fritzl story.
He could be the guy for sleepies. You know, sleepies for the rest of your life.
Now, as we
set a chill up my spine. It's the first time that song ever set an actual chill up my spine.
Now, as we said last episode, this was Elizabeth's second pregnancy, as the first had ended in a sudden miscarriage because Elizabeth was so unhealthy and depressed because her own father had gotten her pregnant. Likewise, this new child named Kirsten, she almost didn't make it either. She suffered from epilepsy and cramps that resulted in screaming fits that no doubt echoed at ear-splitting levels in Elizabeth's 15-foot by 15-foot concrete prison.
It's also, like, fucked up because at least it's something new. Yeah. And she does talk about how it gave her a lease on life.
Oh, absolutely. But even though Kirsten was obviously born sick, the most Joseph Fritzl contributed to childcare were formula and diapers, which he bought at different stores far away from the town of Amstetten to avoid suspicion.
You know, and I could see him doing the our former president style, like when he went down to Puerto Rico for the hurricane, being like
throwing
just
the paper towels,
yeah, just like dumping the diapers in over the thing, being like, okay, have fun shitting.
Now, wouldn't it draw more suspicion to buy from multiple stores?
Well, unless
just get it all from one place. You're still buying baby formula and diapers.
Yeah.
You're just showing up with diapers to another store buying baby formula. That's weird.
Hey, no, you got a specific ass baby. You know how many of these babies are pains in the asses in that way? You know, like they only want shrimp flavored formula.
Yeah. Well, I think you would buy all of them like in a clump, but not go to the same store like multiple times, because it'd be weird if it's like, oh, here's the grandfather coming to buy the formula and the diapers once more.
You know, just to alleviate your suspicions, this is all for me. I am runny as hell and I like my food as soft as an egg. But I hate eggs. So yes, congratulate to me. I'm my own grandpa. Like the song.
The thing about Kirsten, though, is that the child gave Fritzl even more control over his daughter. After Kirsten was born, Elizabeth did whatever it took to keep her alive. And with each successive child, Fritzl's control only increased. To that point, just a couple of months after Kirsten was born, Elizabeth was pregnant again.
Ugh.
In late 1989, she gave birth to her second child, a boy named Stefan. And like Kirsten...
Is it Stefan?
Stefan?
I think it's Stefan. I think Stefan, you know, we all... It's the associations of the name that I can't get past. I can see it coming out with a duck-tailed grease, like, haircut and, like, little sunglasses.
Okay, Stefan. We'll go with Stefan. Yeah. Well, like Kirsten, Stefan's birthday was written down on a piece of paper so Elizabeth could keep track of her children's ages. But while one might think having two infant children would make a lot of noise that would be heard above ground, Fritzl had built his dungeon with extreme skill when it came to keeping it hidden. No one heard anything that would have made them think, hey, sounds like the backyard screaming.
No, it's noise rock. It's my new album called Sounds of Unpleasantness, and I've been working on it for some time now. It's stuff like gargling while, that's what my favorite track is, gargling while drowning in the tub.
Could I be on the album?
No! You're too fat.
Actually, my friend Addie, who, you know, he's a co-owner of the Reykjavik Grapevine. He has a noise rock outfit called AMFJ, and he used to sample his infant daughter screaming for his songs. People in Brooklyn loved it.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I bet they did.
Oh, this is almost like having your own child.
Well, the story that Fritzl had told when Elizabeth disappeared, that she'd ran away to join a cult, it was still working extraordinarily well. Most people who had known Elizabeth simply forgot about her. And when her siblings were old enough to move out, they did, and tried their best to forget their time under Joseph Fritzl's thumb, and therefore forget their sister Elizabeth.
Yeah, these are definitely people that are like, I don't talk to my family.
Yeah. Well, just quick, that's it. Enough, and I don't want to go into detail about it. But it sounds like they almost, in a way, viewed Elizabeth as, like, succeeding in getting out.
Yeah.
And getting away.
Mm-hmm. The only child who was left behind was Joseph Jr., who actually went through a very light version of what Elizabeth endured. See, Joseph Jr. had an unspecified learning disability that kept him from living on his own. So Joseph put him to work as a houseboy and personal servant, only allowing him to leave the Fritzl home once a week.
Oh, so he had two prisoners.
Yes, he had two. Yeah, that's the incredible thing is that Joseph Jr. is never talked about, and the book that we used for this series, Secrets in the Cellar, like mentions him very briefly.
Yeah,
but no one mentions like he had a mentally handicapped son that he kept as a house slave.
Jesus Christ. I mean, it's so hard to teach him to make sushi. I mean, how are you going to get him good at all the various different cuisines you want to try?
Austrian sushi sounds like the worst thing you could ever have.
It's Vienna sausage wrapped in Kuchen noodle, and honestly, it sounds delicious.
It's shrimp thrown against a wall.
Yeah, it sounds good.
That's how I like it. Good and long.
But as Joseph Fritzl's children were leaving home upstairs, Elizabeth was giving birth to more kids in the dungeon. 3 years after Stefan was born, Elizabeth gave birth to her third child, Lisa. Now, the 15-by-15-foot room was holding two toddlers and an infant, so Elizabeth begged her father for more room so her kids wouldn't have to watch as she was periodically raped. But since Joseph Fritzl either couldn't help but be evil or couldn't be bothered to pitch in aside from the actual construction, he forced Elizabeth and the children to do most of the labor to expand the dungeon. They dug out a tunnel from the dungeon to the house's original 1890 cellar with their bare hands. It took years.
I was going to say, those are tiny hands.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Tiny hands, and also very weak at the same time.
And doing it a chunk at a time, like literally just going down and just moving it ahead inches at a time,
And he'd come and he'd take out the dirt and like scatter it around like the backyard. That's how little they were getting done, like each time. It's just like scatter it.
Enough to scatter in the back.
Yeah, very much so.
Now, as a digger, how long do you think it would take you to do this?
Yeah, let's say I have you in an underground subterranean bunker and I'm making babies with you.
Right.
All right, what are you going to do?
You're making, in defiance of God and nature, you're making babies with me.
No, it's because it shows that I'm right, right? In a way, the fact that I can make love to you and a baby is made means technically my actions are correct.
We use the great Austrian Arnold Schwarzenegger to show us how to give how a man can give birth to a baby.
Wow, it actually all runs together. It goes back to the beginning of Austrian history. Adolf Hitler, who had one nut, and then the other baby, he aborted one of his nuts, and then it goes directly to Arnold Schwarzenegger, pregnant with Danny DeVito's child.
Yes.
I cannot give an accurate answer because I do not know what kind of soil I will be digging in, and the kind of soil I would be digging in would change my answer drastically.
One word, Eddie.
Construction guys never give a straight answer.
Eddie, one word, evasion. That's all I'm hearing.
Sounds like you're running up the tap.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think I, you know, obviously once I'm done breastfeeding her, I can kind of, I could see this taking 3 or 4 weeks.
But Elizabeth would only have two pairs of hands to help her dig, because in May of 1993, Fritzl told her that he was taking her youngest child, Lisa, upstairs to be raised by him and his wife, Rosemary.
Moving on up, moving on up to the upstairs, to the big living room that I sit in.
Now, this was a bold move for a number of reasons, but in the end, it actually helped Joseph's cover story. Fritzl made Elizabeth write another note saying that while her parents may be shocked to hear from her after all these years, it's almost 10 years by this point, she was nevertheless leaving them her daughter Lisa to raise. The note claimed that the cult she'd run off to join had a rule where each person could have only 2 children each, and she'd reached the maximum already. Therefore, child number 3 had to be given up, and she figured giving it to her family to raise was the best option. At least that's what the note said.
No one ever thought to try and stop the cult.
Well, that's
it was a fantasy world. What? All of it. You know, like,
but like the police were notified about the cult.
Here's the thing. This sounds ridiculous, but every single person who needed to buy this story believed it. Rosemary Fritzl accepted it immediately. Mm-hmm. The government accepted it when Joseph took steps to properly adopt his own incestuous grandchild. And social workers accepted it when they made regular visits to the Fritzl home. Nobody questioned it. They just thought, cult, okay, I don't really want to ask more questions here.
Well, one thing is Lawyer Illustrated that seems to make some of this make a little bit more sense is how he was viewed in the area is that he was viewed as a no-nonsense, straight-laced businessman. And a lot of times people don't push these questions hard if they go and they're living in a quote-unquote nice house and the kids are dressed and fed. It's a very low bar.
Well, the story's very embarrassing. And they don't want to embarrass this businessman. They don't want to embarrass this person who's like, seen as somewhat upstanding in the community. So they don't really ask questions.
Yeah, because who could resist the wonderful like neck nuzzles of a mustachioed father with Bert hair from Sesame Street, and they all knew that, being like, oh, well, if she can't handle those wonderful sort of brush mark kisses, then obviously that she was deficient as a daughter, and it's not any besmirchment upon these fatherhood skills of Josef Ritzel, because he did everything he could. He's not covered in blood.
Yeah. I guess it makes sense, because if I got a letter from Holden saying he took his family to a cult, I'd be like, oh, okay, good.
Better off.
Good luck.
Really, the only misstep Fritzl made in his mind was that he could have made far more money from government benefits by fostering Lisa instead of adopting her, which was not a mistake he would make twice.
Rise from your grave.
Now, by 1994, Elizabeth had been in the cellar for 10 years, and she was suffering a myriad of health problems as a result. She had an extreme vitamin deficiency, she had anemia, and her teeth were rotting out of her mouth. She, however, had lived her childhood in sunlight, which could not be said of her children, Kirsten and Stefan. They were now 5 and 6 years old and had never once been outside the confines of the dungeon. After much begging, Fritzl did provide them with vitamin D supplements and an ultraviolet lamp. But other than that, they never received any medical care outside of aspirin for the near 20 years the two oldest children spent underground.
Hey there, you piece of shit narrator! That's where you're wrong, all right? I left out the big flat rock, and they had a big... They could go lick at the tube with the water in it whenever they want.
Yeah,
and
you didn't even bring up the salt lick.
They never talk! No one brings it up! No one talks about the fact that I used to bring perfectly smoked piles of smelt for them every other Sunday for them to use as deodorant.
And you know what they say, whoever smelt it dealt it.
Do so. If I could, I would put you first against the wall.
Now, a number of things happen when a human being is completely deprived of sunlight. Besides the vitamin deficiencies, people lose all sense of time itself, which leads to sleep patterns that don't make sense to our bodies. Besides the obvious fatigue, extremely irregular sleep patterns cause headaches, dizziness, and a loss of coordination. These symptoms were only compounded by the underground family's lack of oxygen.
Did they have any idea, like, when a day started and ended?
No.
No.
Like, she had... Well, Elizabeth had... She definitely had a concept of dates. Like, she knew, because she knew how old all the kids were. She knew what day they were born on.
I think she asked him what the days were.
That's probably right.
And I think that he did sort of, because he would come down. One of the things that they...
No, he wouldn't, like, turn off the lights and go, like, good night! And then turn off the lights. The lights were on all the time.
Do you hear those birds tweeting? It's time to get up! Oh, you don't!
But no, it is... He legitimately did keep her, like, at this point, like, at first... It was very much like a prisoner and captive. She obviously had to fake on some level, like a meeting point between him. She began to, out of her own need for survival, would begin to engage with him on a more personal basis. And he'd come down and they would have like check-ins. Because at this point, he views her as his wife in a way, like his basement wife.
Yeah, his dungeon wife.
Yeah. And so when he would talk with her, like he would fill her in on the news of the day and stuff. But it's all from his perspective. So it was all just stuff like, you know, I won a gold medal in the slalom yesterday. And then everybody, the mayor said, get me a prize for my penis on Thursday. This Friday, just so you know, it's day TJF. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that Fritzl, he knew how to work with concrete, but he didn't know shit about HVAC. So Elizabeth and her kids, deprived of oxygen, spent most of their time lying down or sitting due to constant exhaustion. Lack of oxygen also makes it hard to think, which led to emotional and comprehension problems in all of them. I mean, people might ask, you know, why didn't Elizabeth ever try to escape or anything like that? She couldn't fucking think. None of them could think because they couldn't breathe.
This is common. They, you know, we'll talk about Natasha Kampusch too, and they all talk about this concept of like, well, why didn't you leave? This type of extreme torture.
Yeah.
It changes your brain.
Yeah, it does.
You know, it limits the neural connections. Without societal connection, without affection, without these things that are
we view as extremely common because none of us are bound to a basement, you don't understand like what it does to you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we talked so much in Patty Hearst about what just
but she
her
only
time,
got the one chunk of time. This well, is 24 years.
That's exactly what I was saying. It's like she just had a relatively small amount of time
and it fucked her up.
Yeah, in the closet, and it completely fucked her up for years. This is over two decades.
Yeah. And also, like, no matter how much she hates him, and obviously she fucking hates him more than anyone could hate anybody.
Of course.
You need some sort of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's how it goes. You, the human animal and our brains, it's why we evolved so well and so long for so long is because we're highly adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
We can make pretty much any circumstance at some point feel comfortable.
Yeah. We can make it work.
Just fucked.
Well, as far as what they ate, Fritzl only provided frozen, canned, or processed food. The underground family never had anything fresh, and the lack of nutrition, sleep, oxygen, and sunlight meant that there was rarely a time when at least one of them weren't suffering from an infection of one kind or another. Now, Fritzl usually drove out of town to buy groceries for Elizabeth and the kids, again to avoid suspicion. But when he didn't have time to make the drive, he would take advantage of his position as the landlord of multiple apartment complexes.
Yes! That's right! Oh, yeah, I forgot almost. I'm a landlord, too. Oh, yes. I'll go take it from them. I break in. I can do whatever I want. I own the building. I can sell it underneath them. Make them all homeless. Just thinking about it makes me want to come in my lederhosen.
And everyone else had to foot the bill because he had people living for free.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's actually, we'll get to that here in a second. I mean, Fritzl had keys to everyone's apartments. So when a tenant was away from home, Fritzl would let himself in and steal their food.
Oh, fuck you.
Is this the worst thing he's done to me?
The thing was, like, everyone noticed it was happening, but no one could explain it. One tenant thought he was losing his fucking mind because things he bought at the store would simply disappear from his home.
Yeah, I think I was filled with worms.
Seriously. Your brain, your stomach, it's just like,
what's
am I
wrong
worms?
With me?
I think I'm worms. The tenants who lived in the apartments attached to the Fritzl home also had high, unexplainable electric bills. This goes to your point. These came because Fritzl had rerouted electricity from the apartments down to the dungeon, meaning that the tenants were partially and unwittingly funding Fritzl's extreme sexual deviancy.
And what is nobody... this, Brooklyn?
Yeah, literally, Eddie. My next destination. Bushwick. Ah, yes, I will do very well in this magical place called Bushwick, I will.
I want to take some time to thank Frank Oz for being on the show today.
Yes. Left a little bit of cum on my daughter, I did. No evidence.
Now, when it came to educating the children, Elizabeth did the best she could. Using cardboard and glue, she'd make pictures for her kids that told stories of pirates, princesses, and fairies.
Like J.K. Rowling.
Yeah! And while this does sound somewhat impossible, Elizabeth also took great pains to maintain the illusion that the situation in the dungeon was totally normal, if only to give the kids at least a shot at momentary happiness.
And I bet it helps her, too, in a way.
Yeah.
Like, this is can be like, we can all pretend for a second, like I'm just a regular mom and we're in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, she would have had to kill everybody and herself.
Yes. And that's the thing. She never told them that they were all prisoners, but neither did she ignore the world upstairs. She educated the kids about the sun, the moon, nature, and weather, none of which were things the kids had ever experienced. Like, just imagine that. Like, being told about the concept of weather, but not knowing what weather was.
Oh,
I feel like that makes, like, Dweezil Zappa or something. You know, like it makes like it kind of explains a lot of Nepo babies.
Mm. Mm-hmm. You know what weather is.
But I feel like they get special weather. Like they go to a place and they're told that they're like
they get awesome weather.
Jaden, look up there. That cloud, that's for you. You know, like stuff like that. We made that cloud. We purchased that cloud just for your birthday. Yep. Yeah, I'm your father, Will Smith. Yeah.
Bit of a farter.
Oh my God, yeah. That story. Man, I just laughed about it all day.
Honestly, Elizabeth should be happy that Will Smith wasn't her captor, because then also she'd have to deal with the horrendous A-level fart.
Those of you who don't know, new story just came out. Barry Sonnenfeld says that Will Smith farted so much on the set of Men in Black, they had to shut down production.
Shut down production.
That's an expensive fart.
Yeah, dude. Insurance doesn't cover shit like that. They don't know. They were like, what? Yeah. That can happen?
Yeah, the thing I saw a couple of days ago, someone said that they had to shut down a Godspeed You Black Emperor show because a guy was farting so much that he shat himself.
Damn it. That's not even fart problem. That's not a fart problem. That's a shit problem.
Oh, yeah, but Will Smith does have a fart problem. Yeah.
I can't fire Will Smith, but I can fire the caterer.
Yeah. He said he wanted the 7-bean salad. He said, I didn't know I was aiding and abetting.
Well, back to Elizabeth. Oh, man. Okay, well, Elizabeth, she gave birth to her fourth child, Monica, in March of 1994. Fritzl was away on one of his trips to Thailand, so Stefan and Kirsten, 5 and 6 years old, helped with the delivery.
We're going to put the picture here right now on social media of Josef Fritzl on vacation, which we just texted back and forth to each other. And that man is... what would you describe him? He looks like if Beef Wellington was on vacation.
Too tan for an Austrian.
Very tan, spread wide eagle with his big ass bulge. He definitely had a fucking wiener on him.
You think so? Because I looked at the picture and I saw a flatness there. Like I saw nothing.
Let's pull it up. Well, you continue to go,
you
Rob.
Get the,
pull
you
it
get
up.
The text as well, Rob. Just to type in Josef Fritzl.
On vacation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's my ball. That's him right there.
That is a flat. He
wowie,
looks like
wowie,
a,
wow. It's just the belly that makes his dick look small. Nah, that's all of us.
He's like a Ken doll down there.
Yeah, there's nothing. He doesn't even have big nuts.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go with Marcus on this one.
But he is definitely.
Unless it's flat. It could be just flat penis.
I defy you to make 19 children with your family. Okay? Yeah.
Wow, that is a... ooh, man. Technically, that is the lord of... you'd call that a father body. That is a father figure.
Mm-hmm. Now, his arms... are completely covered in hair from shoulder to wrist.
Whatever, man. That's called normal, and it's called... technically, he's very virile.
Don't fucking defend Josef Fritzl's virility attempt to save face for yourself and your fucking extreme body hair.
I'm just saying it's a part of why I... it's gonna wake up hard as the dickens.
If you're gonna call him virile, you have to put criminally in front of him.
Yes, he is criminally virile.
But about 9 months after Elizabeth gave birth to Monica in December of 1994, Fritzl stole the child away and took it upstairs. She made Elizabeth write another note almost exactly like the one she'd written when Joseph brought up Elizabeth's third born. This time, however, Josef Fritzl took the ruse even further, taking an incredible risk for seemingly no reward other than to make a fool out of his wife. Fritzl left the infant on his own doorstep, drove to a phone booth, and called Rosemarie. But when Rosemarie Fritzl answered, Josef didn't speak in his own voice. Instead, the nearly 60-year-old Fritzl impersonated Elizabeth by speaking in a hushed falsetto whisper. He said, quote,
"Hello, it's me, your daughter you haven't seen in many years. Don't be angry. I just left her at your door. Sorry."
I was wondering when Miss Piggy was going to come.
I can't tell you where I'm at. Bye.
Kermit.
Nailed it.
Sorry. You know, that's I got caught doing this when I was younger.
Really?
Yeah, I was dating some girl who and her father wouldn't let me see her ever, and so I like tried to call her house as her English friend Faith.
Oh my God, Eddie. What a penis will do.
Yeah.
Because this is before you even joined drama. Yeah, this is before you did musical.
Yeah, give us your like teenage British girl accent.
Oh, hello, is Dorothy there? This is Faith.
No, you can't fuck my daughter.
No, this is Faith.
No, get the fuck off the phone. You're trying to fuck my daughter. I know you fat fuck. I seen you walk around.
It's just her friend, Faith, and I'd like to say hi.
She doesn't have a friend, Faith. I know she doesn't. Your throat is thicker than the phone.
You know what made me even sadder about this guy? he actually wrote the Miami Dolphins fight song.
Oh.
And he hated me. He really hated
that's
me.
Awful. Because you
like
dared.
The saddest you two looked the whole day.
We've been steeped in the Fritzl story for weeks.
That's new sadness.
That's new sadness. That's personal sadness for a friend. It's different.
Because you were trying to fuck his daughter.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even know what fucking was back then.
I bet he did see you walking around like you fucking asshole walking around.
He definitely had his daughter was dating the biggest boy in school.
Speaking of the biggest boy in school.
Yeah. I mean, when Fritzl called up with doing this falsetto voice, this high-pitched voice, Rose Marie bought it. And I think maybe it's because at this point, she didn't have any other choice but to keep lying to herself about the extreme weirdness of this situation.
I got an email, which I do tend to agree with, what there's almost no way that she didn't know something. That a lot of these people do know something. I think Rose Marie has also just has the same effect of being so abused and so afraid of Yosef for so long that she legitimately just doesn't. It's almost like you could have just brought him in the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you could have just brought the kid into the house and I wouldn't have even said anything. But yeah. You're going through this whole thing, which in a way she must be like, Yosef in his games. You know, like almost charmed by the lengths he went.
We are married for as long as we've been married.
You've got to mix it up.
You just know your picadillos of your man. Well,
he's on picadillos. What Jeffrey Epstein did was shenanigans. These are picadillos.
What is a picadillo?
Oh, it's having sex with your daughter and making multiple children with her.
Oh man, I wish I could go back to not knowing.
No, it's just a funny little thing that you do.
It's like a thing. It's like a thing about me.
Yeah.
I think it's like funny. A picadillo about
me. It's like
me.
You know how you eat like spoonfuls of cream cheese straight out of the bucket.
It's a picadillo. That's
a picadillo.
Oh, okay, yeah. Nice.
It's a funny little thing you do.
Scallion cream cheese.
See, now Eddie's smiling again. All we had to do was bring up cream cheese and he's ready to go.
Mm, yum, yum.
See, he's not even thinking about picadillos.
I'm sitting on some.
Unbelievable. Derailed.
Well, after the phone call, Rose Marie reported it to the police, and within a few weeks, Rose Marie and Yosef Fritzl were legally appointed Monica's foster parents. I mean, all this stuff was on the up and up. Everybody knew about everything when these kids were brought upstairs.
And it just seems to be fine because he was considered to be a successful local businessman.
Now, when Yosef Fritzl turned 60 years old, he bought a Mercedes-Benz and drove around in his new car wearing his customary, expensive, tailor-made Italian suits complete with shiny crocodile shoes. And as far as that famously wavy head of hair went, Fritzl got that installed at an expensive hair transplant clinic in Vienna.
He was very concerned with his appearance.
Very, yes.
And how much did that cost, asking for Henry?
I will not do it. There is a service in Turkey that you go. Apparently you go. It's like a thing. It's like a whole all-inclusive where you go to a place.
Not allowed here, huh?
No. It's because it's bad for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, it didn't really work. Because you notice now, as he's older, right? If you look at the older pictures of Yosef Fritzl, this is also one of the major crimes that he did. He shows how bad a hair transplant is because you could see the front line of his hair where it was installed is there, but then he's bald behind it.
Just still, every time I look at him, I still see the carload of farts guy.
I mean, they look eerily similar.
Well, I hope wherever he's buried, someone paid for the plot.
Ted Pillman, I think, is too poor to die. I think that he's around.
The thing is about Yosef Fritzl, by all appearances, he was a wealthy, successful man who carved out a chunk of Austria for himself in the real estate and property management businesses. But even though Fritzl was good at what he did, his spending far outweighed his income. He was deeply in debt and had leveraged many of his properties just to stay afloat, all to keep one step ahead of the banks.
Oh, at the banks, I heard he had several incestments. Incestments.
Eddie Tunes.
Instead of investments, he had incestments.
Dot.
You happy with this?
That joke cost you all money.
People running away.
The expenses at home, meanwhile, were piling up. In April of 1996, Elizabeth gave birth for a fifth time.
I mean, technically fifth and sixth.
Yeah, fifth and sixth, twins named Alex and Michael. Now, Alex did all right, but Michael developed severe respiratory problems almost immediately. And actually, she's kind of lucky at this point that this is just the first kid to be born with extreme birth defects.
It's wild. Yeah. Actually, it's like, I can't believe, like, I think that's a part of what makes this story so big was the fact, like, in a very perverse way, it was like luck, where she, because these kids all kind of came out normal, there was no real reason for the situation to hit the stakes it would need to take for it to pop.
Mm-hmm.
But no one knows these kids, so we really don't know how normal they actually are.
Well, they're out now, you know.
We'll get into it in episode three, but we actually know a fair amount of what they were like, okay. How they acted when they first got out. But you know, we'll talk about that more in the third episode.
Okay, cool.
Well, Elizabeth begged Fritzl to take the newborn to the hospital, but Fritzl refused, saying, "What will be." And so, after several days in which Elizabeth, Kirsten, and Stefan had to watch an infant slowly die, Fritzl took the corpse and tossed it in the same incinerator he used to burn garbage down in the cellar. But perhaps because the infant's death was emotionally devastating, Fritzl finally put a TV and VCR in the cellar in 1999, 12 years after Elizabeth had been kidnapped, halfway into her time underground.
I think that it's important for us, now that we've all been through so much, and this has been such a trying time for us with the health of the baby, I think it's time for all of us to sit down and watch Scary Movie. I'll explain to you a lot of the references. Obviously, a lot of these you haven't seen, but this is absolutely hilarious. The Wayans brothers are unstoppable right now. And I think that you would... it's time for a laugh.
Well, not surprisingly, the TV was left on day and night, although the kids had a hard time understanding just what it was they were watching. As author John Glatt put it, it was as if the TV programs were being broadcast from another planet. Likewise, the kids learned history and geography from textbooks Fritzl provided, but since the kids had only ever known the dungeon, I really can't stress that enough. Concepts like kilometers or World War II or Napoleon, these could only be cross-referenced with what the kids saw on TV.
That's only what you researched when you were a child.
The rest of us like Legos and He-Man.
I also like Legos and He-Man. I love Legos and He-Man. I still love Legos.
These kids didn't know anything about the Nazi death camps. These kids didn't know anything about the horrors and
nothing
atrocities.
Nothing about Kristallnacht. Yeah. God. Don't even get me started on what they didn't know about Ernst Rommel. Now, when Fritzl came down to the cellar, which was not as often as you'd think, he treated his visits like family get-togethers. He'd bring small presents for the children and sexy lingerie for Elizabeth, which was all bought on a credit card opened in Elizabeth's name, so it looked like she was out in the world still buying shit.
See, and it's kind of fucked up, too, because he missed all the daddy stuff in the sexual world.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
What? Missed all the daddy stuff in the sexual world.
Now it's everybody, people, they say daddy, and they say call me daddy, and then the other show has got the daddy in it, and then, you know, like, it's all about being daddy, and
That's the fucked up thing, huh?
Yeah. Well, I think he got plenty of it, probably.
I'm just saying.
I think he got more than most.
But there'd be more official merch for
More official merch that he would enjoy, that he would buy for her and buy her a call me daddy, like, tank top.
Yeah.
Take it down.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Except I guess he would be wearing the tank top, wouldn't he?
I'm the daddy. That's what's funny. It's crazy in that way.
Yeah, it's really fucked up that he missed all that.
Yeah, it wasn't until he got to vacation until he was called Poppy.
I missed so much.
But when Fritzl forced Elizabeth to wear the lingerie, the children knew that it was time to run to another room, because Fritzl was about to rape their mother. Usually he'd have porn playing on the VCR he provided, and sometimes he'd force Elizabeth to reenact his favorite scenes in a special rubber padded room that he had built specifically for rape. But speaking of construction, Fritzl hadn't thought too much about height when he'd built the cellar. Even though Fritzl was 6 foot tall, each room topped out at 5 feet, 6 inches. Stefan Fritzl, however, the second born, he would eventually grow to be 5'9". As a result, Stefan could never stand up straight after he passed 5'6", while some of the other kids walked around stooped over like monkeys even after they were freed. I mean, think about that. Your entire existence, 5'6" ceiling.
Jesus
Christ.
It's
never, and you know nothing else.
Henry would be fine.
5'7", it would be difficult. And honestly, I like sunshine.
But when the underground family walked around, they weren't really walking around. Even though Fritzl had expanded the dungeon by 3 rooms, there were 2 bedrooms and the padded room, it was still tiny, and each room was connected by passages no more than 2 feet wide. I mean, the pictures are highly disturbing of like what life was like down there. There aren't very many. There were only 2 released, I believe, but they are extraordinarily
Those
disturbing.
Are pictures Rob just pulled up of his prison cell, which is almost twice the size of where he kept her.
Mm-hmm. Really?
But yeah, no, he built his own bathroom.
Like, you did get a, it's absolutely fucking, god fucking awful.
His prison cell looked nice.
It is.
It's like log cabin.
No, it is nice. It's a good vibe.
It looks like an Airbnb.
No, and the Austrian prison is nice. It's better than, like, any hotel in Midtown.
Mm-hmm. Now, in addition, the walls were always damp and covered in mildew. And everyone had constant fungal infections as a result. Again, the only treatment they ever got, despite Fritzl's wealth, was aspirin. The issue of space could be why Joseph Fritzl, in August of 1997, took the surviving twin infant Alex upstairs, the third such child to be taken away from Elizabeth. By this point, though, Fritzl barely needed the customary note from Elizabeth saying she wanted her parents to raise another child. It's just like, oops, here's another.
Yeah, she just didn't care. And she just assumed. I believe that Rosemary also maybe put it up to he's having sex with many, many sex workers and bringing home the children. She knows, I think, that he goes on sex tourism and that he would go and come back. And I think that's a lot of what she just assumed. This is some affair partner. And she just didn't want to deal with it.
Do you think Elizabeth felt relief whenever he moved the child upstairs?
No, I think she felt intense grief.
Well, intense grief, but also, you know, the knowledge that the child would have a better life.
Yeah.
Upstairs.
But you also have no idea if the thing's even alive.
Also telling her that one day we're all going to be upstairs. Mm-hmm. Like, he's starting to say stuff like that.
Well, I mean, concerning the authorities, though, instead of thinking that maybe it was weird that so many kids were ostensibly being dumped on the Fritzl steps, authorities accepted it. It was just one of those things, you know? Just one of those crazy things.
They probably also thought he was the quote-unquote illegitimate children of sex workers.
But it's like, every few years, the crazy Fritzl girl who ran off to join the cult, she gets pregnant, she drops off a baby, we got to do a bunch of paperwork, and then just one more guy in Amstetten.
Yeah, yep. I'm sure, like, the cops even looked at Fritzl is a good guy, someone who like takes kids who need help and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the children who went upstairs, they were far better off than the ones left downstairs because Elizabeth's other children were largely raised by Rosemary. These kids went to school, they ate, they had sunlight, they lived as good of a life as was possible with Joseph Fritzl in their home. But lest ye think he began to mellow with age, Fritzl was introduced to Viagra when he was in his 60s, which made his frighteningly strong libido even more violent and long-lasting.
Let's just say I'm a people pleaser. I just want them to know Joseph is coming. He's bringing that pipe. No matter what's going on, I'm super stressed at home. My basement wife is on my ass about sunlight. My upstairs wife is just, I hate the way she sits and stares and says nothing. It just drives me nuts. Even that's annoying to me. The way she breathes is annoying me. So just nice to let off some steam in here. You know, just sit and talk, vibe.
And how did you get the vibe? What'd you say to the doctor?
Oh, I told him, you know me, my noodle isn't as noodle as I want it to be.
And he was like,
give me a wink. And he showed me what I need to do.
Live from your grave.
Well, as if what Fritzl was doing at home wasn't enough, he was also visiting brothels well into his senior years, and his tastes were getting stranger as he got older. One sex worker called him sick beyond imagination, but she also didn't elaborate. It's like she couldn't even talk about what he made her do, while another said that he forced her to call him teacher for some reason.
Yeah.
Now, in 1998, Fritzl went on another month-long trip to Thailand, followed by 2 weeks in Italy. But just before he left, He stockpiled massive amounts of food in the dungeon so his underground family wouldn't starve to death. But while Joseph was on his six-week European-style vacation, another Austrian was making his own incursion into the world of dungeon kidnapping. His name was Wolfgang Pricklepiel, and in March of 1998, he kidnapped a 10-year-old stranger, a 10-year-old little girl named Natasha Kampusch, and locked her in his basement for 8 years.
Now, Wolfgang Pricklepiel, he is not quite the charmer. That Joseph Fritzl
is. No, he's a technician, communications technician.
Wolfgang Pricklepiel is a fascinating fucking weirdo.
Yeah.
Who is, this guy's fucking weird.
I know nothing about him.
Oh, well, you'll learn some.
Mm-hmm. See, Pricklepiel had also constructed a sex slave dungeon in his cellar in the southern Austrian town of Strasshof an der Nordbahn, which was about an hour from Vienna. This one, however, this cellar, was far smaller at approximately 5 feet by 10 feet, just room enough for a bed and a ladder.
I was watching a very interesting documentary on him, and you could see his buddy. The only way to really describe him is that he does look like somebody Indiana Jones punches at the beginning of a Nazi sequence. Like, it's this guy, like, he looks like the first attack. And he was, quote-unquote, like, Wolfgang's, like, co-worker. And he says in this whole thing, he's like, you know, Wolfgang came up to me, this concept of making a soundproof room, and he showed me the materials that he was working on, and I looked at them, and I said, oh, Wolfgang, this will not absorb enough sound, and you need to make this more, and I gave him all the instructions, and I guess he followed them to the letter.
He's just sitting there like, oh, God.
Well, Natasha spent 3,096 days in Pricklepiel's thrall, having been abducted in the most stereotypical way possible. He just dragged her into his white van off the street.
It's very long legs.
Yes. But to that point, police did question Pricklepiel during the initial investigation, much like British police questioned Peter Sutcliffe during the Yorkshire Ripper mass canvass. Also like the Brits, Austrian authorities were satisfied by Pricklepiel's explanation that he was alone on the morning of the kidnapping, and they therefore left him to his devices.
I'm always alone! I don't know why you would think I would be anything but entirely alone!
Now, Natasha was not allowed to leave the chamber at any time during her first 6 months of captivity. But unlike Joseph Fritzl, Pricklepiel did eventually let her out. For many years, Natasha was allowed to leave during the day just as long as she stayed under Pricklepiel's close watch. Once Natasha turned 18, 8 years after she was kidnapped, Pricklepiel actually started taking her outside of the house. Because, you know, at this point, no one's going to recognize her.
Oh, yep. So at first it was just like the backyard and stuff.
At first it's just the backyard, upstairs. But then eventually, he took her outside of the house. But he threatened to kill her if she made any noise. And she thought that he always had a gun on him at all times. So she took him at his word. In fact, he once took her skiing for a few hours near Vienna, although Natasha maintained she had no real chance of escape.
Yeah, because she had skis on her feet.
You know what? That's really true.
Yeah, it's hard to do.
Mostly, though, Natasha spent her time upstairs doing housework or cooking for Pricklepiel when she wasn't locked in the cellar. He would beat her so hard she could hardly walk, he'd starve her to make her physically weak, and would, of course, rape her repeatedly. Like Joseph Fritzl, Pricklepiel also lied to Natasha by saying that booby traps were in place to prevent her escape. But instead of just the cellar being booby-trapped, Pricklepiel told her that all the doors and windows on the house were rigged with high explosives set to go off should she ever try to leave.
It's so crazy, because, like, if that's what you thought, like, it's interesting that they still had the will to live. Because it's like, at 8 years, you tell me there's explosions and the house is going to blow up. It's like, fuck it, let's rock, bro. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Let's do it. That's different. You're a big macho man. Mm-hmm. And she was a little girl. But Natasha Kampusch kind of talks about it very interestingly, because she said she viewed herself, she did have a very strong will to live. And she viewed herself as living in defiance of him, and that she was going to live no matter what. And according to her, she was looking for as many outs as she could, but it was the way he did it. Like, there was a couple of things that he said to her that was also part of the thing. So the first thing, he would come in and he would bring her presents. Like, he'd bring her fancy croissants. It started with the expensive toys. Then he would bring stuff like piles of mouthwash and scotch tape to her and say, like, you can play with this. And then eventually he started telling her that he was a reincarnated Egyptian god and that she just had to go with it. She literally had to sit and be like, yep, you're Cyrus. And he's like, yes, very much so. Oh, sand in my toes. I'm Mr. Pharaoh Man. And then you have to call him Maestro over and over again. But then largely, eventually, even the sexual nature of the relationship changed, the rape changed to him coming in crying in her arms like a toddler, like crying. So he would like flip it on her where she would sort of be the adult comforting him in these very, I'm going to go honestly, odd circumstances.
Yeah, real strange.
It's like if someone with dementia was totally in charge.
Yeah.
Wow, what's that like? We've only had like three presidents like that. It's like literally three of them.
But finally, on August 23rd, 2006, Natasha had a chance to make a run for it. Sometime that afternoon, she was vacuuming Pricklepill's white van in the garden when Pricklepill got a call on his cell phone. In order to hear the call, he walked away from the vacuum noise.
Hello, Creepo Services! I'm coming up with my long legs on!
And once he was out of sight, Natasha ran through the neighborhood, jumping fences and pleading with any person she saw to call the police. Strangely, though, no one reacted to Natasha's pleas, and pretty much everyone just kind of went about her day, just sort of brushed her off. It was only when Natasha knocked on the window 5 minutes into her escape that a 71-year-old man named Inga finally responded. I mean, imagine that, 5 minutes of running and screaming and trying to get help.
And thinking
at any moment, like, he's going to come around the corner and he's going to catch you. Five minutes.
It's
like,
the end sequence.
It's an eternity.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah,
and no one helped. Even this is also post Fritzl's capture, right?
No, it's not.
No.
Oh, okay.
This is what's fucked is that this is all during.
She loudly said to the old man, I am Natasha Kampusch, which rung bells immediately. And Inga called the police, who quickly took Natasha into custody. This is before Fritzl. This is in 2006.
Oh.
Fritzl's 2008.
Oh, man.
And I'm going to talk more in next episode on Yosef's point of view, but he talks about this case being like one of the first pop up, and it like, when he saw this thing hit the news, the Natasha Kampusch hit the news, the story hit the news, he kind of like, it was the first beginnings of the unraveling of his like super long-term plan in his own mind. Like he started like, apparently for him, that's when the interior pressure started to build.
Yeah.
Because it really was very difficult on him.
He finally realized that what he was doing was wrong.
No.
He finally realized that what he was doing, people would not look kindly upon.
Well, he always knew that they would. That's why she was underground. But because he knew that they would never understand, and so this was just way more like, oh, they're going to start looking for hidden girls more.
Yeah. Yeah, Joseph Fritzl, he's kind of like a Nazi at Nuremberg who will never admit that anything he did was wrong.
He's a full Nazi. I'm going to talk, next episode, I have some more talking about more of his Nazi thoughts.
Cool. Now, Wolfgang Pricklepill knew that the game was over the second he saw that Natasha had escaped. So the 44-year-old communications technician hopped in his red BMW and drove to the Weinnord station in Vienna. There, he jumped in front of an oncoming train and ended his own life.
Yep.
Incredibly, Natasha...
Bye-bye! He's getting exploded like that.
Oddly the nicest thing he's ever done.
Yes.
Honestly, I think it means he's a fucking pussy and he couldn't handle the punishment.
Of course!
Well, incredibly, Natasha Kampusch ended up owning the house where she'd been imprisoned for so many years. Since Pricklepill had no family, she claimed it from his estate after his death and became a regular visitor in the years after her escape. As of 2017, she still owned the house, although she said she'd fill in the cellar if she ever sold it.
She is truly an inspirational person. Same thing as Elizabeth Fritzl, but she is her interviews are powerful.
Yeah, and she wrote a book about the whole thing too. Like Elizabeth Fritzl, like, you know, as we'll talk about, she faded it. Like she was like, I'm done, don't talk to me. I'm out, like, this is over. But Natasha has like become like a person who really speaks out about this stuff.
Does she live in the house or does she just own it?
It's her vacation home.
She spends a fair amount of time there. But
that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know why. I don't know if I could do that.
I would burn it down.
No,
I guess it's worth money, but
I don't know. They said that, you know, there were, you know, reports that she, you know, would go and, like, kind of was cleaning the place out. And just, yes, she would spend extended amounts of time there.
Wow.
Just, I don't know. Maybe it was familiar. Who knows? Maybe she was trying to face something. You never know why people do the things they do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Natasha didn't escape until 2006. Back in 1999, though, she was just 1 year into her captivity, while Elizabeth had been underground for a full 15 years. When Elizabeth's time reached 18 years, the age she was when she'd last seen sunlight, she gave birth to her seventh child, Felix. Now, Fritzl did entertain the idea of taking Felix upstairs as well, but he decided that Rosemarie couldn't handle a fourth child. So, Felix was sentenced to stay in the dungeon with Elizabeth, Kirsten, and Stefan.
There's also a little bit of talk of the way he chose what kids would go up, because let's just say he has a type. And so there was a little bit of,
maybe I'll make my second wife one of these ones.
Third wife.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for reminding me. They'll go by so fast. It's now, crazy, dude.
Now, the kids he moved upstairs, were they the ones that he would want to sleep with, or would he keep those downstairs? God, I hate that question.
Eddie, I'm so glad you asked that question.
I can answer that question as well. I don't know. We may have two different answers, but yes. I have an answer as well.
I believe that they were the ones he was acclimating to real life that he would maybe peruse in a Tinder-like fashion.
Okay.
I believe that the ones that he had an eye on, he kept downstairs.
Yeah, that's because what
it
I
was a. More see, of the a, thing is, though, do you like sun-grown pot or do you like fucking the hydro shit? I actually prefer sun-grown.
I think he appreciates the hydro.
Nah.
Wow. Weird. Weird guy.
Now, besides the stress of raising three children solely in a place that's smaller than a railroad apartment, Elizabeth's body was breaking down due to a lack of the most basic human necessities. She was only in her mid-30s, but her teeth were falling out due to rot and disease, and her formerly red hair was now gray. As such, Fritzl announced that he was no longer attracted to his daughter and stopped raping her as a result. He now, however, was turning his gaze towards his granddaughter, Kirsten. She was now 13 years old, but was just as frail and sickly as her mother's sister.
Every time, like, I'm kind of smiling from something we said, it just gets sucked right off my face.
That's the idea. That's called our show, Eddie. Yeah, that's what's incredible,
that's
you know?
Push and pull, last podcast on the line.
Yeah. It's always kind of wondering, how am I supposed to feel?
The sweet and sour, the bitter, you know? But perhaps to ease the burden, Fritzl brought a washing machine into the dungeon that same year.
That's a quid. Natalie loved it. For our anniversary, our fifth anniversary, I bought one of those wash boards so she could take it down to the LA River and wash my underwear in the swamp. And she was happy. Like, hot tip, fellas.
Yeah.
Ladies love a washing machine.
And she was so happy about it. She called Julie. She told her about that. I had to buy fucking Julie a washing board.
Damn it. I'm sorry. Sorry. At least they get to go down by the river and sing their folk songs and stuff. And then we could tell them how many kids we're having.
But that's the thing. I would imagine it would just make the dungeon more miserable.
Yeah.
Because of the space it took up. And, you know, it's not like she needed to save time. Like, she had plenty of time to do laundry. Like,
yeah, she's not. She's unfortunately, she's the exact opposite of a wife on the go.
Yeah. Now, Joseph Fritzl turned 70 years old in April of 2005 and still showed no signs of letting Elizabeth or her children go. He could have died at any time, and Elizabeth and the underground children would have starved to death down there without anyone even knowing that the kids had existed at all.
And he's fucking Kirsten at this point?
Beginning to groom Kirsten.
I don't know. They never talk about that.
Okay.
Like, they hint at it. It's hinted at, but it's never really talked about.
Yes. You know what's also interesting is that Natasha Kampusch also talked about the fact that her Wolfgang was very sickly. And what he would do is he installed an intercom. And so he would talk at her all night. And largely was insulting her / sobbing / it's not well. And he called her, and he would call when he was sick, and he'd go there and be like, I don't know if I'm long for this world. Who will take care of me? Like, all night long. And eventually she's like, if he dies up there, I'm going to die down here.
Yeah.
So she'd have to be like, no, Wolfgang, you're going to make it. Like, have to, like, kind of, be like, and help him and go. He'd let her upstairs to, like, help him feel better and, like, take care of him when he was sick.
Fuck me. That's so horrible.
And then she had to.
Yeah.
Because if I don't keep him alive, I die down there in a much worse way.
Yeah. And Elizabeth knew that as well.
Yeah.
You know, that if he dies up there.
I'm fucked.
Well, she told, he had told her that there was like a special mechanism that was in place.
It would release over time.
It would release them if, you know, if it reached a certain amount of time. That was not true at all.
Of course it wasn't true.
It was 8 doors.
Yeah. It would probably, well, I mean, I would imagine, that's the thing, is that you really do wonder through those 8 doors if anyone would have smelled the bodies.
If
they would have died down there.
No, they were in a concrete prison with ventilation.
If you look, there was a tiny door that he would use to get through the cell. Like, it wasn't like there was a massive door in the cellar that it was like, oh, no, don't go down there. Like, he had it. It was a little door about 2 to 3 feet tall that he would open up and crawl into and then stand up and then would go through the rest of the doors to get back there. So,
it's like Willy Wonka.
And so, I mean, the, you know, 4 dead bodies, that is going to be a lot of, that's going to be a lot of stink.
Yeah.
But it could also be possible that they were in there deep enough that people might be like, where the fuck is that smell? Where the fuck is that smell coming from for about a week? Like,
yeah, and then eventually
like,
you would.
Like you do with the dead rat in New York City in the walls. Like you're like, well,
you wait for the maggots to start crawling out your light bulb.
Yep.
Exactly. And that would probably have been the case there. And, you know, and who knows after someone bought the house in 20 years, 30 years.
Yeah, if they'd uncover like,
uncover the basement, or, you know, if you find weird
inspections,
shit.
House inspections, have, like, that's just what they're supposed to find.
Yeah. Or you find weird shit in the house, sometimes you're like, I don't know what's behind that door. I don't really have the effort to, I don't really want to check out what's behind that door.
That's my line in the sand.
Then you do.
If I'm buying a house and the realtor or something says, don't open that door.
It's my house.
I don't know what to say.
The door. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't say, I don't know. If you say like, hey, what's behind that door? And someone says another door.
Run away. Run away. You'll buy the house.
Yeah. I'm not fucking going anywhere near it. Well, to most people upstairs, Fritzl seemed to have the appearance of a good family man. He and his wife were raising their wayward daughter's 3 children, which everyone thought was a noble cause. And in 2006, the same year Natasha Kampusch escaped, Fritzl and his wife celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary.
Oh, and what a romantic night it was! we just had a slitter. It's amazing. I got these wonderful candelabras from my ancestors, and they have these wonderful little crosses. And X's on them, and we just lit them. And yo, she loves the light of a Nazi candlelight. She loves it.
But the next year, it seemed like Fritzl already had an inkling that the truth was going to come out one way or another. He was chatting with one of his tenants, coincidentally a former classmate of Elizabeth's, and told him that, quote,
one day this house is going to make history.
How?
You wait. Just wait. I don't want to spoil it.
And indeed, Fritzl was correct. But once Fritzl hit his 70s, he very plainly got tired of the whole rigmarole that came with having a second underground family. Now, at first, he considered just killing them all to hide what he'd done. But since he was an old man, getting rid of 4 bodies, small and malnourished as they were, that was going to be a challenge. And if there was a smell that was going on while he was still alive,
it would come out while he was transferring the bodies.
Well, if there was a smell, he'd have to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, if like he just kind of let them starve down there, he'd have to deal with the smell because he's the fucking landlord. Well, and landlord's got to deal with smells.
Well, he's got an incinerator.
Mm-hmm.
He's already put one, maybe 2, if you count the miscarried child in there.
Yeah. I will say, guys, just know that if you are mad about a man or a lady ghosting you, it can be much worse, because this is the worst ghosting possible. Because at the end of this ghosting, you become a ghost.
Yeah, you die. Well, Fritzl, he actually began to lay the groundwork for Elizabeth and the kids to leave the dungeon by continuing the cult narrative. He thought this actually might work. In 2008, Fritzl made Elizabeth write another letter which said that she was tired of the cult and she wanted to come home. Apparently, Fritzl was going to slow roll the entire process to make it seem natural. But in April of that year, Fritzl's slow roll plan fell apart when Kirsten, Elizabeth's firstborn, she got dangerously sick and started having seizures. This came amidst a mental breakdown where Kirsten tore her hair out in clumps and ripped off her clothes so she could stuff them in the toilet to clog it up. And so, on April 16th, 2008, on Elizabeth's 42nd birthday,
God.
She begged her father to take the 19-year-old Kirsten to the hospital. And that's where we'll pick back up for Joseph Fritzl Part 3, the conclusion to the saga.
You thought we'd end it in two, but guess what? No. We're still in the basement. And we're going to continue. But it does get interesting because there was a lot of new information. That's a part of why it got to three parts, is that a lot of new information has dropped in the last year.
Yeah.
Like, really? That has really kind of, well, now it's this whole, we'll talk about it, but it's very, it is interesting. There's a third chapter here, and it's a little uplifting. Right?
Really?
Yeah, in a way.
No. Like, out of the basement uplifted.
No, I just think, in a way, it just shows, you know, Joseph is still able to forgive himself. And I really think that's the hardest thing for anybody to do.
Powerful.
Yeah. It's so hard to absolve yourself of things that you've done. And for that, I'm really proud of him.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. You know, that's the thing with being Catholic. You know, you can just go to confession and everything's fine.
Yeah, that's what, it's so great. Jeffrey Dahmer's up there right now, loving heaven. Him and Michael Jackson, loving life.
Patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft is where you can go to watch video episodes of every show we do, as well as many other cool things. You can check out the stream, Last Stream on the Left, every Tuesday.
You fucking better. I say live on Patreon on Tuesdays, then it goes up on YouTube for free. We take out the juicy parts that YouTube won't let us show, but that's why you gotta sign up for it live, and you can yell at us as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can follow us on the socials at LP on the Left on TikTok and Instagram. Check out all of our streams at LPN TV. LPN TV is at Twitch. twitch.tv/LPNTV for the live shows, and they're on YouTube for everything afterwards. You can also come see us on tour. Check out lastpodcastontheleft.com. Click on shows. Click the date. Buy the tickets. Boston, LA, Brooklyn, London, Iceland. We're coming to you this year, and we don't know when the fuck we're going to be back, so make sure to grab your tickets as soon as you can. See us when we come on out.
Nice. I got stand-up on Monday. Come and check me out in Burbank. If you're in Burbank, I'm going to be at the Good Night at 8 p.m. or come at 7 p.m. I think it's at 7 p.m. at the Good Night. It's like light comedy or whatever.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's going to be a lot of fun. There's karaoke afterwards. We'll have some fun. I got a nice set, and let's party, bro.
Hell yeah. And that's
fuck at it.
And that's on October 7th.
October 7th, this Monday.
Hell yeah.
All right. Sounds good to me. Hail, sweet Satan.
Oh, and hail Gain.
Oh. Would you like to hail?
Telecom, no! Telecom, no!